A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 119. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Space 1999. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
When the moon is torn out of Earth orbit and sent out into the universe, the crew of Moonbase Alpha are aimlessly wandering through space on the moon, and we follow their adventures in this ITV Gerry Anderson live-action TV series from 1975 to 1978.
That's right, Gerry Anderson, mixture of live-action and model work, two series, both of them 24 episodes, 50-minute episodes, and it is one of the sort of giant shows of British science fiction television. It's a show that we've been asked to cover, and we've been building up to it. And so here it is. In our last episode, we talked about the first season and the production and what went into that first season. And then I think it's fair to say that there were some changes for the second season, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There were lots of changes. And in fact, part of what was lying behind this was that Gerry and Sylvia Anderson had separated during the production of the first season, and I believe at this point when they were looking at mounting the second season, the two of them were in divorce proceedings. So it was a little bit complicated, and it looked like the two of them would not be co-producing.
Not ideal.
Yes. And what happened at this point was Fred Freeberger, who had actually produced the third season of the original Star Trek, he came on as the producer and the showrunner for season 2.
Yeah, that's right. So they were in plans for a second season, but unfortunately, a bit like we discussed in the last episode when we talked about UFO, the viewing figures for the first season of Space 1999 were actually a bit disappointing. So disappointing that Lou Grade, this enormous figure at the head of ITC Productions in the 60s and 70s, he cancelled the show. So there was to be no more Space 1999 after the first season.
And he usually supported Gerry Anderson's TV work quite a bit. So usually if that happened, then there was a reason. You know, financially it looked like they wouldn't be able to do the second one.
Yes, I mean, as we talked about last time, this was an enormous production, a £3 million series, quite the most expensive thing on British TV at the time. So it was cancelled, but Gerry Anderson and his new producer, as you said, Fred Freeberger, they successfully argued with Lou Grade to actually get a second season. But unfortunately, that involved some changes, Brian.
Yes, it did. It was a cheaper second season. It was not as high budget as the first one. And they did certainly make some changes. There were more action-adventure-type plots and less in the way of the intellectual discussions and the ideas and things that some of the first-season stories were based on. They also went to new, brighter, more colorful uniforms and a new soundtrack with music by Derek Wadsworth. They changed the title sequence into something much more action-oriented, with lots of short clips and guns going off and things. And they no longer had the this episode sequence of clips of what you're about to see like they had in the first season. So it was definitely scaled back and sort of made to be more sort of action-oriented and faster in that sort of way. And the sets were also smaller, so it seemed like it was going to smaller studios. They went to particularly a smaller set for the main control room where the characters would usually be.
And it does look like a dramatically different show. As you say, we've got new music, we've got a new title sequence, we've got new costumes, we've got new characters as well. And in particular, one of the things that Lou Grade's production team had asked for was the introduction of an alien character to the sort of crew of Moonbase Alpha, very much in the mode, I think, of Mr. Spock from Star Trek. And so we're going to get Catherine Schell, who actually had been played, you know, appeared as a guest part in the first season. She becomes a regular cast member playing the metamorph alien shapeshifter Maya. And then we have some other characters disappearing. We don't see Professor Victor Bergman anymore. We don't see the mission control commander Paul Morrow anymore, without really any explanation for why they disappear. We get one other main new character who's mentioned in the title, in the credits at the start. We have the actor Tony Anholt playing security chief Tony Vadeshi. And he becomes a sort of main sort of action-orientated figure for the second season, who wasn't in the first season at all. And again, no explanation for why this character has suddenly appeared in Moonbase Alpha in such a prominent role. But these were the changes that were sort of forced on them, Ryan.
Yes, it seemed almost as if this character was the second in command, or, you know, a very high-ranking person who was there all the time and just appeared when he hadn't been there before, which was a little bit surprising as you watch it. They also made the romance between John Koenig and Helena Russell, these two central characters, they made that much more explicit. It was sort of hinted at maybe there was a little something between them in season one, but in season two, it was stated outright the two of them were a couple. And also, I think both of them were played with a bit of a lighter tone. They were slightly less serious characters than they had been before.
Yes, that's right. It is sort of, there is more humour and laughs in the second series, and this more explicit romance between them. So yeah, changes there as well.
Yeah, and as you had mentioned, Eamon, Victor Bergman, played by Barry Morse, disappeared after the first season with not much in the way of an explanation. Various reasons have been suggested behind the scenes for why this would have happened, that Barry Morse may have left through the process of contract negotiation, or he was just not satisfied with the scripts, or perhaps one of these types of demands, they no longer wanted to see a character like that on the show. It wasn't really clear. At least it hasn't been clear to me. There was also talk about having him appear at the beginning of season two and having the character die with you know, a spacesuit malfunctioning or something like that. We also knew from the first season that Professor Victor Bergman had an artificial heart. And there was some suggestion that I think maybe there was a reference in the second season that maybe the artificial heart had failed and he died because of that. So there were some interesting ideas, but unfortunately it was something that they didn't do very much with on the series.
So, yes, as you say, you know, strange disappearance of Victor Bergman, strange disappearance of Paul Morrow. Our new characters of Tony Vadeshi and Maya, the shape-shifting alien, who can transform herself into any form of animal, or can replicate other humans or turn into various space creatures, which she does quite often in the episodes of the second season.
Absolutely.
And then we've got some other cost-cutting measures because of this, you know, the enormous budget for the first season. We've got them doing a lot of sort of doubling up episodes, I think, in the second season, Brian, where it's quite clear that some of the actors are not in an episode very much because they're shooting another episode at exactly the same time. So we get quite a few sort of solo adventures, or with just one or two of the main cast stuck in an away team situation on a moon or a planet or a situation like that. So we do see those features. I think they're a bit more obvious in the second season as it goes on, Brian.
Yes, you get a certain amount of switching off, it seems, between Tony Anholt and Nick Tate, as those two characters, you know, one will be in an episode a lot and the other only a little bit or not at all, and then a different episode it'll be reversed. So you have some of those kinds of things.
And we've got these action adventure stories taking place on planets that they sort of encounter on their travels. And I did seem to notice more and more as the second season went on that the planets they visit, the sets all look very similar and very familiar, I think, Brian.
All the planets look alike to me, something like that.
I think that seemed to happen as it went on. They began to look all look alike to me. A bit like the cliche of Doctor Who always landing in the same quarry. Here, the away team from Space 1999 always seemed to land on the same wooded set on a planet.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Maya, played by Catherine Schell, unlike Security Chief Tony Vadeshi, they did have a story that explained where she came from and introduced her onto the show, which was nice. It was nice to see that introduction where she is, you know, somewhere on another planet and ends up not being able to stay there and joins the characters of the series on the moon base.
Yes, that's right. And as well as having her shape-shifting abilities, she's also from a technologically advanced race. So she fits in quite naturally as the science officer for season two, sort of replacing the role of Professor Bergman, who, as we said, sadly doesn't seem to get a mention or an explanation for his absence.
Yes, that's right.
You can't do it, Commander.
You think I have a choice?
That transfer process nearly blew our whole life support power system. To attempt to transfer 50 more people would inevitably destroy it.
Launch recovery Eagles.
Yes, sir.
So, looking at spin-offs and distribution and where this show went, it was quite widely sold all over the world for broadcast, actually. Of course, it was in Italy with the co-production with RAI. It was marketed in the States as the $6 million TV show. It was quite a big deal there. And of course, having these well-known actors, Martin Landau and Barbara Bain, who had been on Mission Impossible, and in the first season, also Barry Morse, who had been the police officer in The Fugitive. It made it quite a big show with lots of marketing. It was also actually the case that it was syndicated in Canada and in a number of Canadian markets. It was actually broadcast before the original Star Trek was broadcast, because the original Star Trek was on NBC. It was not syndicated. And at that time, there were lots of communities where they couldn't get NBC, but they could get syndicated shows. So Space 1999, for quite a number of people, was an introduction to a style of show that they did not get earlier with original Star Trek.
Oh, right. That's interesting to see it that way around.
They also packaged several pairs of episodes into movies that were broadcast as sort of a 2-hour slot with a couple of episodes knitted together.
Okay, so it's shown all over the world. And as you mentioned in our last episode, Brian, that does reflect sometimes in the broadcast order. So episodes shown in different orders in different regions, which, you know, we've seen before with Gerry Anderson shows. It allows them to do that, but it does take away from the sort of developing plot arcs or something like that. But yeah, there's all sorts of different recommended viewing orders, which you'll find on the websites.
Yeah, of course, that meant that when they produced the show, they could not rely on the order that it would be broadcast in. So the types of ongoing development they could do, it were very limited compared to what we saw on, for example, shows from the BBC.
That's right, yes. Now, we've also got other spin-offs at the time. As you say, it was very heavily marketed. It was a very expensive show, and they're looking to recoup that in its marketing around the world. So as well as the episodes and the movie versions, we've also got lots of novelizations of the episodes. It was in several comics at the time, and you can find those on the various websites now. And of course, there were loads and loads of toys. As with any Gerry Anderson show, quite a number of the spacecraft and also action figures and so on were produced. Plus, there were, you know, comlocks and lunchboxes and all sorts of various bits and pieces with the Space 1999 logo. Almost, I think, as much marketing as probably we saw for Star Wars a few years later, Brian. It's that sort of order of events.
Yeah, the Gerry Anderson shows, the merchandising for them was sort of like the precursor to what they did for Star Wars. I think it was on a larger scale with Star Wars, but certainly it had that feel with all kinds of things being produced.
Yes, games, books, toys, everything.
Yeah, tons of stuff. And of course, there was talk about doing more Space 1999 for television. There was talk about doing a third season, which, of course, did not happen. There was also talk about doing a spin-off for the character of Maya. And neither of these even entered pre-production, but it was something that they were talking about doing sort of roughly at the time around when the second season finished up and not too long after that. And much later, in 1999, in fact, the writers, Johnny Byrne and Christopher Penfold, who were key to the series, especially in the first season, but in both seasons, they were attempting to revive it as a new movie and sort of have something brand new produced. And of course, that didn't happen, but there was an interesting effort going on then as well.
Okay, and then we've got some fan-produced spin-offs as well. And rather interestingly, we have a couple of little epilogue pieces. In 1999, for a big Space 1999 convention called Breakaway in Los Angeles, there was a fan-produced short film called Message from Moonbase Alpha, which was actually written by Johnny Byrne, and it starred the actress Xenia Merton, who played the character Sandra Benes in the original show, and she delivers a sort of final message to Earth, telling what's been happening to the crew of Moonbase Alpha, and that's quite an interesting piece. We gather, as I say, it was produced for this convention and it wasn't supposed to be shown afterwards, but I think it got out into the wild and is now almost, I think, looked upon as almost official, Brian.
Yes, it is actually included on the Space 1999 DVD sets. And depending which DVD set you have, you may have either the original version from that convention. And I believe there have also been some sort of updated or enhanced versions where they added some additional effects and things, and maybe additional clips from the series and so on. But yeah, it is seen as more or less official now because it's on the DVDs, it was written by Johnny Byrne, and it starred one of the original actors. Also sort of interesting, it debuted at that convention on September 13th, 1999, which was the date that the moon was torn out of Earth orbit, according to the TV series. So that was sort of a nicely planned little thing.
Brilliantly timed. And it is actually rather well produced as well. So yeah, it is worth watching. You can see it on YouTube as well as on the DVD set. And there is another little piece of fan-produced epilogue which sort of gave an explanation as to what happened to Victor Bergman. There is a short film called The Return of Victor Bergman, which again was produced by fans in 2002 with the actor Barry Morse. Not quite sure how official this one has been regarded as, Brian, but it is up on YouTube. You can go and watch this short 8-minute film, which sort of explains what happened to the character of Professor Bergman.
Yes, that's right. Now, there is another project that is also an unofficial fan-based sort of project, but quite a sophisticated one. It's by a group called Retcon Studios, and it's called Space 2099. And it is not licensed or official, but it seems like it's being done at a very high level of quality. And they are doing a re-edit of the original series, Space 1999. They are doing it in high definition using some high definition sources, like there are some Blu-ray discs that have been released, and they are re-editing it to change the pacing to make it feel a bit more like a modern series. And they are actually doing it in such a way that they make some changes to the plot in a number of places to allow slightly better explanations and better science. They are changing the order of the episodes and sort of linking things up to emphasize the ongoing storylines more. They are doing some new effects that are being used alongside some of the original effects. And they are really doing a very significant sort of reworking of it into sort of a new modernized series, including one of the things that they're doing is changing all of the dates. So it will, in fact, be Space 2099 instead of 1999. And all the events take place 100 years further into the future. So they have some interesting things going on there. They have lots of clips on their websites, and there is a 10-minute video on their website that explains exactly what they're doing, and it's quite interesting and a little different and very ambitious. They are doing things, for example, to help explain what happens at the beginning of the series. They have the moon being torn out of Earth orbit and sucked through a wormhole into another part of the universe in order to explain how they got so far away so quickly. As far as I know, they do not have any complete episodes available yet, and I don't think there's any indication of how things will ultimately be made available.
Okay, so interesting fan-produced stuff. And with such a big show as Space 1999, we probably can't cover everything in the detail that we could with some of the smaller shows. We'll put the links up to some of this stuff on the show notes page and on the Facebook page, so you can go and check out. And as ever, there's also quite a lot of fan websites out there. In particular, there's the Gerry Anderson site, Fanderson, and there's a site called Space 1999, The Catacombs, which I found very useful in gathering information about this show. So lots of stuff out there, and we'll put some of the links up in the various notes for the show.
Yeah, there really is a lot of stuff out there about this one.
Yeah. And one more thing that we think might be coming in the future. I was listening to a comics podcast recently, and one of the writers was talking about producing a series of Space 1999 graphic novels for the comics company Archaea Entertainment, and that they might be coming out in 2012, and that they will continue the story of the crew of Moonbase Alpha, and it will fit in with the sort of canon epilogue of a message from Moonbase Alpha as well. So that might be interesting to look out for in the future.
That indeed could be interesting. So something to look forward to on Space 1999 stuff, in fact.
Absolutely.
So we should get into a little bit of some of our own thoughts about Space 1999, the good and the bad. So Eamon, what did you like particularly about Space 1999?
Well, we keep saying it, but this is a big show, and it did have quite a big scope and some great big ideas thrown up there on the screen, including perhaps the slightly implausible idea of the moon being blasted out of orbit. But, you know, we have to give them credit for ambition. It was big stuff, really, wasn't it, Ryan?
Yes, the scale and the scope of it, especially in Series 1, were very big indeed. And that was handled pretty well. I like how they used that scope there. And yeah, there were some nice things there. I also rather liked some of the ideas they got into in the first season, especially, that you would get into some philosophy at times and some science and the ideas of the possibilities of things. A lot of the conversations with John Koenig and Victor Bergman had some interesting things in them, and I quite enjoyed that.
Yes, lovely stuff there between those two in the first season. Yeah, the idea is great. The writing, you know, I suppose it's variable, as it would be for such a long show, but it's pretty good throughout, I think, Brian. There's some very well-written episodes.
There are, again, I think especially in the first season. I think they kept it on more of an even keel for the most part than some of the earlier Gerry Anderson stuff. I think the script editing may have improved a little bit compared to some previous things.
Okay, what about our performances? We sort of hinted at the main leads for the show, that they're very good. Anything particularly to pick out as good as or bad throughout all the acting?
I think most of it, again, especially in the first season, most of it was pretty good. Again, I particularly like the character of Victor Bergman, played by Barry Morse, and some of those scenes involving his character were very good. Also, the scenes in the first season with Helena Russell and John Koenig, where there were hints that they might be involved, but we certainly didn't know they were a couple at that point, and it was sort of ambiguous. They had some nice things there, and another couple that was there in the first season, they sort of gradually moved on this idea of Paul and Sandra being a couple, and that was sort of a nice bit of development, I thought.
Yes, it was good to see those sorts of hints developing in the first season. Yeah, interesting stuff. We've got the model work, which we, you know, again, the Gerry Anderson production team well known for, and it doesn't disappoint here, I think, Brian. It's all excellent stuff. Lots of great science fiction, special effects, really, and lovely models.
Yeah, I thought the models were a little bit variable in the quality of what they did there. There were some things that just seemed a little bit sort of static, without a lot of motion happening with it, but certainly in some of them, they really stepped up and had some very good scenes with the Eagles and the various other ships and things that were very dynamic and looked very good. I would say that some of the model work in Space 1999 was about the best sort of science fiction spaceship work before Star Wars that I've seen.
Right, yes, absolutely. And of course, as we've said, the production, the SFX team would go on to work on Empire Strikes Back. So, there is a pedigree there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've also got a very interesting and, again, a sort of reassuring use of, interesting portrayals of race and gender in a Gerry Anderson show. We've mentioned this before in UFO, but for the time, it's very sort of progressive. And we've got this nice multicultural, multi-sort of racial crew on Moonbase Alpha. And that's done very well. It's nice to see in science fiction.
Yeah, in the first season, you really had that sense of the international crew. Even with a lot of the actors being British, they had people who had sort of different accents in some cases. So you definitely had a feel that there were people from all over the place who were there. And where they had come from was not really an issue. And that was nice. I thought that worked quite well.
Okay. Now, we keep hinting at this, but as we've said, there is quite a difference between the first and second season. And I think we're sort of coming round to talk about the second season and some of the problems there, Brian.
Yes, there were a lot of problems with the second season. It does seem a bit like it's a different series. And unfortunately, I think in almost all respects, it's not as good. The two main characters, John Koenig and Helena Russell, became much less deep and interesting than they were before. They became sort of a little more humorous, and they were, obviously a couple, and it just wasn't as interesting seeing them there.
That's right, yes, okay. There's the changes in the portrayal of Koenig and Dr. Russell. And as you say, we've also lost the sort of philosophical or moral issue episodes and replaced them with a number of basically sort of standard action adventure stories, a bit more like traditional Star Trek or Lost in Space episodes, where they encounter yet another planet with another strange alien race who usually want to put one or two of the main characters into some sort of peril and have them fight their way out of it.
That's right. Now, we had two major new characters, Tony Vadeschi and Maya. So what did you think of them, Eamon?
it is tricky, isn't it? Because we sort of miss, obviously we're missing Victor Bergman and we're missing the character of Paul Morrow. And Tony Vadeschi's not really an adequate replacement for them. He's a rather, let's be honest, he's in some places rather annoying character. And then Maya, we've got this sort of idea of her being able to change shape into any person or animal or creature. And that has two problems for me. Firstly, the space monster suits they put her in get more and more rubbish as the show goes along.
Maya changing into a man in a gorilla suit is just kind of bizarre.
It is, yes, it is kind of bizarre. And it looks very strange. Plus, they have the makeup for Maya herself, which for me turns a very attractive actress, Catherine Schell, into quite, they make her look very unattractive in her Maya makeup and hair. So I thought that was rather strange.
Okay, I will say I actually did like Maya as a character, and I thought the makeup was okay. I liked how Maya looked, and I enjoyed the character when she was Maya, when she was herself. It was the shape-shifting aspect that was not very good, because it wasn't as interesting to see, this person in an alien monster suit, who didn't speak, going around and doing something. That wasn't as interesting as seeing a character there and seeing, a bird or an attack dog or something appear. For some reason, Maya, having never been to Earth, always changes into these animals from Earth. That was never quite explained.
No.
But yeah, the shape changing in most cases, there were a few exceptions, but in most cases, it was just not very well used. And the things that she changed into were usually more odd than anything else. A lot of the time, the character as herself, I thought, was okay. I enjoyed Victor Bergman more, but she was an interesting character to have around too. Tony Badeschi was less interesting. I thought he was not particularly a good character.
No. Okay. Were there any other problems you had with the series as a whole?
Well, most of the issues, I think, were with the second season, and I think we've covered a lot of those. With the series as a whole, I think the first season was certainly much better. The writing was usually good. I think it was a little weak and a little bit, you know, leading in that sort of action series direction a little bit. Sometimes I think it was trying to be like an American series and trying to be like original Star Trek a little bit too much. When it was sort of doing more of its own thing, it was always better, I thought.
Right.
And even in the first season, there were some inconsistencies in Koenig's character, which I think Martin Landau himself was trying to work against. But still, there were sometimes points where he would come through as this hawkish, almost warmonger type character, you know, shoot first, ask questions later. And then most of the time, he would be a much more considered and diplomatic kind of character. So there were some inconsistencies. There were some problems there. All in all, I thought the first season was definitely okay.
Okay. Are there any standout episodes you'd like to recommend or pick out?
There were some good episodes for sure. There was an episode early on called Earthbound that had Christopher Lee as a guest star, and that was wonderful, of course, and had some clever stuff in there, and it had an ending that was quite memorable.
Yes, very. Yes, it is a good episode. You're quite right to pick that one out, yes.
What about you? Any interesting episodes?
Well, we like, from the end of the first season, we like Dragon's Domain. Again, another very memorable episode, which people who saw it will remember for the weird tentacled spider monster. And it's an episode with a sort of mixture of flashback and current action with a character who has to return to sort of overcome a monster that he'd previously encountered. And that was very well done, I thought. A good episode, very creepy.
Yeah, the use of flashback in there was very good, for sure.
Yeah. And then right at the end of second season, we've got the Dorkons with the ever-reliable Patrick Troughton turning up, and that was quite fun.
Yes. I thought the second season, towards the end, the last several episodes actually started to improve, or at least the last several episodes in the order that I've been watching them in. They actually started to add a couple of new characters, which were actually okay ones.
Yeah.
And there were some kind of interesting things in there. Dorkons was definitely a good one. And Dorzak was another interesting episode where Maya meets one of her own people for the first time since she was introduced. And they did some interesting stuff in there. And that had one of the better uses of Maya's shape-shifting. And it was sort of an interesting character piece there, too.
Okay.
The monster was more than any of us could believe. According to our criteria, it was never alive. So how could we be sure that it was dead? As we hurried back to Alpha, before our moon drifted beyond reach, we could only wonder about the astronauts of those other fabulous ships. All we know about them is their terrible fate.
So, let's talk about the availability of Space 1999. Here in Region 2, there have been releases of both the first and second series separately. Those DVD sets now deleted. I think they're making way for the Blu-ray releases. So in 2010, we had Season 1 released on Blu-ray, and that's still available here on Amazon for about £34. And I presume Season 2 will be following on. But we've also got, you can get the 30th anniversary mega set, which is all the episodes plus some extra features. This is a Region 1 set, but it is available here in amazon.co.uk. And that's about £35 currently for the whole thing. Plus, you've got individual episodes which you can stream from Love Film or also on iTunes. Or you can rent the whole thing from Love Film, but obviously that's several DVDs as well. So various ways of getting to see it here in Region 2. In Region 1, Brian?
It is certainly available in Region 1. That 30th anniversary mega set is available for about $50 on Amazon.com. And there are also Season 1 and Season 2 sets for about $35, $37 and around that range. The Season 1 Blu-ray release is available on Region A as well. That runs for about $45 on Amazon.com. All of these are available on Amazon.ca for a little more, usually. And there have been a number of different DVD releases in the past, so you may find quite a few of them available as used titles here and there. I should also note the Season 2 Blu-ray release has not actually been officially announced. Unofficially, the company has said that they are hoping that maybe they'll be able to release it in late 2012, but it is actually quite an intensive process to convert this to Blu-ray, to high definition, which I believe is being done from the original film elements. But hopefully that will be coming at some point as well.
Oh, okay. We look forward to hearing about that. We've mentioned Message from Moonbase Alpha, this little epilogue film, which is available on the DVD mega set, but you can also watch that on YouTube, and you can also find the Victor Bergman short film on YouTube as well, and we will put up some links to those on the Facebook page. So, having said, as ever, how you can watch Space 1999, we turn to the question of whether you should watch it, Brian. What would be your recommendation for this big show?
You know, this is a bit of a tricky one. It is an interesting show. It has its moments. It, in many ways, and we didn't get into this too much, but in many ways, it feels like an American show rather than a British show. And that was something that Gerry Anderson sort of worked towards in many cases. But it is, I find, an okay show. It's reasonably good. So I will have to give it a tentative. If you're looking for a fun space series, you can check it out. It's kind of fun, but I will not consider it a must-see by any means.
Okay. For me, it's interesting that the stuff I remember from the 1970s is the second season stuff with Meyer's various monster costumes. But watching it again now, it was the first season which really stood out to me. I think the first season is some great stuff, which unfortunately they rather threw away for the second season. So I would say the first season of this show is definitely worth watching. And what you may want to do is perhaps stream a few of those episodes from Love Film or iTunes to get a feel of it, perhaps before investing in the whole thing. But certainly the first season, great. Second season, not so good, really. A bit rubbish, to be honest, in comparison with the first.
Okay, so mixed reviews from us, depending on which season you're looking at.
Absolutely, but it is a very important show. It is Gerry Anderson. And as ever, we'd like to hear your views on the show and on the two seasons. So please do get in touch with us, especially if you've watched this this recently.
Absolutely. We have had very nice, spirited discussion about Space 1999 on the Facebook group. It's been lovely to see that. So thanks for contributing to that, folks.
Absolutely, yes. All the contributions on Facebook, and this has provoked a lot of contributions. All very welcome. Thank you.
Yes. So, in summary, Space 1999 was a mid-1970s TV series that showed us Moonbase Alpha on the moon, and then a series of explosions causing the moon to be thrown out of Earth orbit and sent off out into the universe beyond the reach of Earth. And from episode to episode, the characters encountered all kinds of aliens and different phenomena and different kinds of situations of all sorts. And they went from a more philosophical idea-based show that also had some action to it towards a more action-oriented show when they went from the first season to the second season.
Okay. As we've said, a very important show in the history of British science fiction television. Please let us know if you watched it recently and give us your views.
Yeah, it was very influential and it's very well remembered for sure.
Yep. So next time we go from a very long show to a much shorter show, and probably the most recent show we've covered on British Invaders. We're jumping all the way to 2010 to an adaptation of an H.G. Wells novel, The First Men in the Moon. An interesting show for us to look at, not least because it was adapted for the small screen by another British Invaders favourite, Mark Gatiss.
Yay!
Yay! So some interesting stuff for us to talk about next time as well, Brian.
Yes, it's an interesting novel and an interesting TV show and adaptation, so it will definitely be a good one to talk about then.
Fun stuff next time.
Absolutely. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, call in Moonbase Alpha, come in Alpha, call in Moonbase Alpha, come in Alpha, call in Moonbase Alpha, come in Alpha, call in Moonbase Alpha.